Streets of the Science podcast with your girl, Anne with an E.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Root of the Science podcast with your girl, Anne with an E. If you are new here, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to have you on. Remember that you can follow the show on all the various social media platforms, and you can also tell us if you'd like to be on the show or if you think there's somebody we should have on the show. Reminder that every Friday we have a newsletter that goes live on our LinkedIn pages as well as on email. So make sure you subscribe. The newsletter is information and stories by other African science communicators, not only me. And if you would like to subscribe or contribute to that, also do send us an email at info@rootofthesciencemedia.com. Now that we've got all of that out of the way, this is another episode of the Women in AI series. It's been such an amazing series, and it's lovely just getting to know some of these incredible women who are doing some phenomenal work in this field of AI, particularly in Africa. And today is no exception. Today we have Jenelle Rahab on the show. She is from South Africa and works at Masakana at Lelapa. In this episode, we will talk about her AI journey, the winding road of it, and how she got there, some of the amazing work that she's part of and the projects that she's part of at Lelapa with language processing models. And also we talk about some of the ideas of how to have more diversity and inclusion in this field of AI, and also the future that she envisions for this field. So come on, let's take a listen. Let's go. Good morning, Jenelle. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
It is such a pleasure to have you on today. Could you just quickly brief us? Who is Jenelle? Where are you from? And just briefly, what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Jenelle Rajab. I am from South Africa. I'm an AI research scientist at Lelapa AI. And part of my role, I lead the product research team, and we build natural language processing models for low resource languages.
Awesome. Thanks for that intro, Jenelle. I think for many of us, you know, AI is really, it's a career that is pretty big at this time, and a lot of people want to get in it, and AI, there's a lot of overlaps into so many other different professions. But for you, how did you get into this field, like from the beginning? What were you doing? Did you always know that this is something that you want to do?
No, definitely not. I certainly didn't take a very linear path as a researcher. I have had a lot of different roles in my career. So actually I started as an electrical engineer. That's what I have my degree in. Mm-hmm. And then after I'd finished studying, I decided that I was really overstudying and I didn't want to continue into masters, etc. I just wanted to work. So after that, I did a graduate program and it was in information systems. So with that, I got to work overseas and travel a lot and explore. So that was really fun. But I ended up coming back to South Africa because I love it here and it's always going to be my home.
Yeah.
And then after that, I actually became a project engineer. So I worked on the substations in sub-Saharan Africa for a while. I really enjoyed it. It was kind of back to my roots as an engineer. Mm. And I also had an amazing team that I worked with. But obviously, it's not always easy to be a female in these rural substations in Africa.
Yeah.
So you don't really get a lot of autonomy in a role like that. It's going to be quite a winding story. So
no, let it wind. Let it wind.
Okay. So then following that, I decided to rather do system analytics. So I joined a small mining company in South Africa, and okay. I helped with their system analysis. So everything from the inventory to the asset management to the HR systems. So that was quite a learning experience, and I got to touch so many different parts of how a business is run and how it works and stuff. And then through that, actually, that's how I decided to go into AI, because after doing all those systems, we had this mountain of data that was all digitized. And I thought, you know, actually, you could do something with this data.
Mm.
And AI was obviously all over the news, especially data science.
Yeah.
And so that's when I decided to work part-time and go and do my master's at WITS.
Mm.
And then following that, I then got involved with Masakana and Jade Abbott, and then eventually made my way to being a researcher at Dolapa. So it's not a straight path. And I actually am very grateful for the fact that it wasn't, because I've had so many exposures to how businesses work in different aspects, and you can really pull from that.
Mm.
You know, I think it gives you a lot of different perspectives. Recently, actually, I've been reading this book. It's called Range by David Epstein.
Mm.
And I think it just shows that you can kind of start something wherever you are in any stage of your career. And it might not be considered the natural progression, but it can always work out.
Mm. No, this is amazing, Genevieve. And I'm so glad that you've already touched on that, because that's what I wanted to touch on. I think for many of us, rather let me not speak on other people's behalf, but this is something that I've also just been thinking of. But the idea of pivoting, because I think maybe you sometimes feel like, if this doesn't work out, oh my goodness, I'd have to like start again and learn something new. So how was that, like the actual processing? Was it easier or was it hard in the beginning, and then it got easier to go from electrical engineering and then to pivot to here and then to pivot to here? Did it get better over time? Because I think that's what keeps many of us stuck in specific roles, because we think, oh my goodness, I don't know how I'm going to go from here to here to here. But I think just listening to your story, it's quite amazing how you started from one particular place, you went somewhere else, you kind of got back to it, then went somewhere else, then, you know, and you're now here. So how was that, like the process in the road ship?
I agree. It's always very daunting to try something new. And often I felt, you know, when I was doing my master's and stuff, that I got in there so late. You know, I was like one of the oldest people in my master's class. And also just seeing how much experience people had over me. You know, some people had obviously been in the AI field for like 5 years and even more, and I was just starting. But, you know, I think sometimes you just have to go with the flow a little bit and seize the opportunities that come your way. So one of the biggest like benefits that I had was just leaning on the people around me, you know, just accepting that, yes, okay, I don't know as much as them. That's fine.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that I won't someday know as much as them. So while I can, let me just absorb as much knowledge as I can from the people around me. And often people are very receptive to that. You know, if you admit, oh, sorry, I actually have no idea what that concept is, would you mind explaining it to me?
Yeah.
It's very rare that somebody will say no. But yeah, I think that it is very hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that it's easy to just change your career direction. Mm. But if you find something that you're really passionate about and you would really like to try, I mean, even if it doesn't work out, at least you know, right? At least you know, okay, I wasn't really meant to be a research scientist, and maybe I should just be an engineer. But then you have more range, and you can use all the stuff you learned trying to be a better engineer. So,
yeah, they say it's never failure. It's just lessons upon lessons upon lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so now let's talk about some of the work that you're currently doing. Could you tell us about some of the projects that you're currently involved in, and something, the things that you can share, of course, and yeah, in terms of the language processing field that you're a part of.
Yeah, sure. So at Lelapa AI, we focus on low-resource African languages. So currently, we are working on our Vula Vula product. It comprises of transcribes, excuse me, transcribes, so text-to-speech. I mean, sorry, let me just reverse it. Okay, so we're focusing on our Vula Vula product.
Mm-hmm.
It has four different components. So one of the components is transcribe, so where we do speech to text. And this is obviously one of the major focus points for call centers and customer facing interfaces, where people obviously phone in to get advice, and then these calls need to be analyzed. The second one we're focusing on is speech, which is text to speech. So the reverse of transcribe. We also do analyze, which is involved in named entity recognition and sentiment analysis and all the analytics that you can put on top of text. And then lastly, we're focusing on converse, which is creating products that enable intelligent chat spots in these languages that we care about. So our focus for now is predominantly on South African languages. Obviously, that's where we have the most knowledge, because the founders are all from here. And also then some of the major African languages like Swahili, Hausa, Yoruba. Those are also some of our focus points.
That's so fascinating and obviously very needed work. I've always had this question, actually, generally, when we're speaking of the work that you do in terms of language processing. Many of you are data scientists, etc. Is there an overlap with other disciplines, like working with people who've done like languages, like I don't know, like literature, etc., in terms of helping you develop these types of language processing models, or is it just purely the coding?
So at Lelapa, we draw heavily on data experts, mm-hmm. or data experts as well as language experts.
Yeah.
So we don't pretend that a computer scientist can do everything, certainly can't. And especially when you're working on languages that you personally don't speak.
Yeah.
You know, it's very important that you involve linguists. So we have a lot of linguists that we contract out to evaluate our models to tell us if they're firstly culturally relevant, if there are any harmful outcomes from our models, and then also to guide it from a more linguistic perspective. You know, they have studied this, they are experts in this language, they can tell us, oh, for example, your system is not working very well on verbs, or it's not capturing this particular diacritic that you know is part of the language. So certainly we draw on them quite heavily, and we never put a model out into production until it's been evaluated by a linguist or a cultural expert to make sure that it is on track. I know that a lot of places don't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you see a lot of like harm in AI, especially with these large language models. But it's very important for us at Lelapa that we create models that like fit the people they are made for, right? So if you, for instance, speak isiZulu and you want to use this product, it will be a seamless experience for you. And you won't feel at some points, oh, that's not really part of my culture, or oh, that's quite offensive, you know?
Fascinating, fascinating. And yeah, I mean, those are the conversations that, as much as AI is very helpful, it does have some, you know, issues. And apart from just the language aspect, what other ethical considerations do you have to consider, or maybe other challenges that you have to consider when working with AI, particularly as, you know, as there's a huge increase of the integration of AI into various aspects of society?
Yeah, that is a huge cornerstone of AI at the moment around ethics, especially when these huge corporates release these models into the world. And I think one of the things that we particularly do is, obviously, aside from making sure there's no bias, that it's the model is representative and not harmful, is we also try and make sure that our models are explainable, that we understand why our models are producing the outputs that they produce.
Mm-hmm.
So explainability is a huge thing in our team. And one of the things that is driven by the founders is to really make sure you understand why your model's doing what it's doing. So we go into the data ourselves and we see, okay, this output is happening because of this specific aspect in our data. Oh, we need to get more data for that. Mm-hmm. And then I think another thing that's very important is to really define your scope of your model. So you can't release a model into the wild and say, oh, this will fit every use case. You have to specifically say, this has been made for a call center, right? So if you now start using our transcription model for general domain WhatsApp transcriptions, it might not work as well. You might have things that, you know, creep in that were unexpected. So I think that's one of the ways that you can promote like ethical AI and safe AI, is making sure that people understand the scope of your models, that you're transparent with the data that it's been trained on, and also that you've taken the necessary steps to make sure that it's not a harmful model.
No, for sure, for sure. So, for example, in the Vula Vula project that you're currently working on, you spoke about the idea that this can be used in call centers. So this is sort of the end use application of this in the real world. So with the work that you do at Lelapa, is it companies, let's say, for example, something that both of you and I know, let's say Vodacom, which is a cellular network, would come to you and say, would like to use this type of model in our call center, in our call centers? Is that how evidently this all works?
Yes, yeah. So we try and do these products as a service. So for example, exactly as you just suggested, people who have call centers in Africa, who have a large client base, for example, who don't only speak English, which is a lot of what the call centers cater for now.
Mm.
And they have no way of analyzing, for example, the conversations that the call center agents are having with the customers. Mm. And they would come to us and say, could you please, can we use your product, for example, to detect which language is being spoken and then do the transcription so that we can do our quality assurance checks on top of that? That's kind of the approach. We also get approached by companies to do chat interfaces. So we are not in ourselves a chatbot company, but we can enable chatbot companies to service their customers in more languages, you know, detect intents and stuff in isiZulu, in Sesotho, in Afrikaans, for example, and then make their platforms and their businesses more successful and reach a wider range of audience.
It's fascinating work. Absolutely incredible work that's being done at Lelapa. Kudos to you and the whole entire team. This is something that's obviously very well needed, and it gets me excited. It gets me so excited that there are people who are thinking that way to make for inclusivity and just accessibility at a language level, because English is not the most common language in the world, and there are many people who get left behind when that assumption is made. So congratulations to you and the team. I just want to go zoom out a little bit. You touched on it earlier, on the idea that in your journey, you worked in some places where it was predominantly male dominated, and there were some, you know, challenges. And and I know this is also a topic that you really see, particularly in the tech industry, right? And you can talk maybe on your own perspective or just generally. I just wanted to ask you, how do you believe we can encourage more women and people of, you know, unrepresented groups to pursue careers in AI and tech, given this ecosystem that is currently existing, which is not always so welcoming and particularly favorable?
So I think that one of the biggest ways that we can do that is just exposure. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I help with Pilonomi, who's the CEO of Lalafa and one of the co-founders, is we work at this organization, or she founded it. It's called Code Comorso. And we go to high schools and do IT courses for particularly girls' schools. Mm. Often girls' schools don't have that as a subject. So that in and of itself is amazing exposure. I mean, you don't even know what you could do potentially if you've never seen it, right? So unless maybe you have somebody in your family who's in the tech field, often girls don't even think of computer science as a possibility. So that's one of the biggest things is exposure. And then also there are some amazing communities specifically devoted to women in AI. So I would definitely encourage anybody who's thinking of getting into the field or has already been in the field but is not getting the support that they think they need, is to find these communities. I myself am involved in quite a few, and it's such a nice space. You get so much support. You get a shoulder to cry on. You know, everybody's kind of going through the same things, so you don't feel so alone. Just recently, actually, with Masakane, we had a female-only research paper that we published. So you just have to find your people, to be honest. I mean, it is quite hard, especially if you find it quite intimidating to be in a room full of men. I've had that since undergrad, so I think I'm a bit used to it now. Maybe I'm desensitized. But honestly, there's such amazing communities out there. And they're really, really supportive. And I think, you know, women supporting women is really, really needed. Often in my career, some of the harshest comments I've received are actually from women. Mm. And I've always thought that, you know, there's so few of us here. We should be pushing each other up as much as possible.
Yeah.
So if, for example, you are already in the field of AI, I think if you can and if you have capacity, you should try and help people coming up in the fields and add them to your communities and add them to like initiatives that you're doing, for example, and just make them feel a bit more included.
No, so true. So true. It does require, I think, from the inside as well, as much as we do say that the men need to take some accountability, but I think women helping women to make them feel safe, to make them feel, you know, valued as well. And there's so much space. I fully agree. Thank you so much for that input. As we wrap up, last question, what do you envision? Because I mean, this field is obviously moving at such an accelerated pace. So maybe even what you envision could happen like next year. But I'm just thinking, like, looking ahead into the future of AI, what do you envision for it as a whole, and what role do you hope it plays in shaping the future?
Yeah, that is a very hard question. not the role I hope it plays, but just the next exciting breakthrough.
Yeah.
I mean, this, like you say, this field is just accelerating at such a pace that there's something released every day.
Mm.
I think the most exciting thing about particularly the NLP field is the amount of open source models that are released. It's quite mind-blowing that you can have access to these models that Facebook and Google, et cetera, have spent millions on creating, and you can just build whatever you want on top of it. That makes me very excited, because it means that people have the agency. You know, you can take it, fit it to a use case that solves a problem that you have or your community has, and you can use it. So my ideal future would be that AI becomes more inclusive because of it. I mean, there's lots of people putting in a lot of work to make sure that these LLMs are fit for more cultures, more languages, are not just represented of the Western world, but also represented of our lives in Africa. So ideally, it would become more inclusive and that people can start solving their own problems. You know, I always, well, one of the things that Lalapa always says is that nobody's going to solve our problems like we can, because we're the only ones who know the problems. And even yesterday, I was talking to a friend of mine, and they were saying how one of the biggest problems with ambulances at the moment, especially in South Africa, is obviously in some of the townships, a lot of the streets are not named or they're not shown on Google Maps, for example. And that's something that we could fix. You know, it's a problem we have and we could fix. But the West is definitely not going to fix that problem for us, because they don't have that problem, right? So I think that just the idea that there's so many people growing in this field, particularly on the African continent, we have so much talent here. And so we can just take these models that are being released by these big companies and we can just solve our problems.
Yeah, what an exciting, exciting space. That's so exciting. African solutions for African problems. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Generally, it's been amazing chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking out the time. I've learned so much, and I'm sure the listeners also have had an opportunity to learn a lot from you, from your personal journey, and also just more importantly, what you are doing at Lalapa. We wish you all of the best and continue forging the path for so many other women to come into this space and to see you guys as a beacon of hope. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for having me. It's been a nice conversation.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And to everybody else who's tuned in, thank you for listening to another episode of The Root of the Science podcast with your girl, Anne with an E. Until next time, goodbye.